You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
And good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the west coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the east. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Wednesday, September 6, 2017. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for your belief and your trust, as I always say, because there's a level of trust when I'm sitting behind the microphone and acting, of course, as an investigator and even by extension an investigative journalist. So thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for sharing this program with others. I appreciate that. Thanks for your support as well to keep this operation going, whether it's prayers, financial, or otherwise. Thank you so very much. We really appreciate it collectively from the Hagman and Hagman Report and individually as we do separate programs. Remember, 9 to 10, of course, me, then 2 to 3, Joe and John, and, of course, our mainstay program, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, the Hagman Report. That's the big show at night. And speaking of that, tonight we're going to have a great show. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. James Simpson from The American Thinker is going to be on, writer for The American Thinker is going to be on, talking about his McMaster article about H.R. McMaster. Interesting take on this. You know, loyal or is he loyal or is he a liar? That's how ultimately what it resolves to. And James Simpson has an interesting take, so make sure you tune in tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for that. And I might as well tell you the rest because it's a good lineup here. That's for the first 30 minutes, the first segment. The second segment is going to have, debut guest Alex Nitzberg. He's a podcaster up on current events. And then the two segments are going to be Jim and Angie, Victorious Libertas, the infamous now, I'm sure you've heard of him on YouTube, really, really going great guns out there in terms of exposure. So that's really good, introducing them to our listenership, our base of listeners. And I think they're a pretty interesting couple, pretty interesting indeed. And in fact, they just, I think, and if I'm not mistaken, I do believe two things, and I could be wrong on both, but hang with me on this. I think that they were affected by the flooding in the southern part of the United States and had to relocate, I think, or somehow were otherwise affected. But the one thing I'm sure about is they interviewed Cynthia McKinney and Robert David Steele. And it's interesting because we had Robert David Steele on, and he was the one that really kind of, you know, our platform propelled him with the his various initiatives. So it's interesting. And then, of course, our third hour tonight, the anchor of our Wednesdays, and that's Pastor David Lankford. So tune in tonight. But, you know, I told you on Friday, on this show on Friday, before the holiday, that it was all about the Hillary emails, right? The title of the program, The Fix Was In, or Bombshell Discovery, The Fix Is In, the Comey, the FBI Comey fix was in. See, I had to turn my head away from my mic to look at the other screen to see what the title was. But yeah, it right from the beginning. And it's interesting because now Sean Hannity last night, he had James Kellstrom on, the former assistant director of the FBI, as well as Jay Sekulow on. And we're going to hear from both of them this morning. But it's interesting that, again, we were one of the first. You heard it here first. I told you. Tomorrow's headlines today. What people are going to be talking about tomorrow, today. So you're ahead of the curve, and I stand by that. Before we get into this in full force, that topic in full force, I do want to mention this. Honestly, when you look at these progressives, and I know you think, for example, the Hollywood celebrities are what do people, first of all, I don't care what some D-list, B-list movie star, Hollywood person, even A-list, I don't care what they think. Their job is to entertain. Okay, and if you want to go see a movie or you want to watch a show on TV, their job is to do what? It's to entertain. Keep their mouth shut, stick to their script, go home, collect your paycheck, overwhelming paycheck, and shut up. Just shut up. I don't care what your thoughts are on DACA. I don't care what your thoughts are on anything. Because in the scheme of things, what do you do to change the hearts and minds of America other than pollute the minds of America? But what do you do? Now here we have, and I want to get into this real quick here because I think that this is just absolutely ridiculous. Alyssa Milano, remember Who's the Boss? She was the Tony's daughter on Who's the Boss. Real pretty girl, actually. Maybe. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But Alyssa Milano thinks it's hilarious to mock religious people who pray for Hurricane Harvey victims. I saw this tweet, and I thought, nah, this had to be like, even though there was a check mark next to it, I you know, to verify authenticity on Twitter, I thought, nah. But I did drill down, research it, and yeah, it's her. Here, Donald Trump on September 2nd, that was Saturday, said this. Remember, Sunday is a national day of prayer by presidential proclamation. That was Sunday, September 2nd at 11:02 p.m. Well, not quite 24 hours later, Alyssa Milano tweets out, remember, Sunday is national a-hole day, and she spelled out the word, by president proclamation. Okay. Number one, who cares, you might say. Who cares? Well, you know, young people are impressioned by this, and some people are impressioned by this. But, you know, tell me what's funny about that. Tell me what's hilarious about that. Tell me how cheeky do you have to be? You know, how original do you have to be? I'll tell you. No, I won't. I'm ready to, though. But maybe the bigger story here is the National Day of Prayer. When was the last time under Obama we saw the National Day of Prayer? That's the bigger story by presidential proclamation. You didn't. That's the bigger story. You didn't. All right. Let's take a brief trip down memory lane. Memory lane not too distant past. Actually, to bracket or to show you. If you go back and listen to Friday's show, and I urge you to do so. I think Friday's show was one of the most important shows I've done. Friday. September 1st. The bombshell discovery, I think that was one of the most important shows I've done, because here at issue is the rule of law in the United States and the equal application of the rule of law. If it were you or me, any one of us, doing what Hillary Clinton has done and Bill Clinton has done or James Comey has done, we would be in jail, absolutely in jail. Now, last night, Sean Hannity, I'm gonna play two different clips from Sean Hannity. And the reason I'm doing so is to verify what I told you on September 1st on Friday has come out on Tuesday following by Sean Hannity. So you have four full days ahead of the curve on this. But also, he adds a different perspective and dimension to the email case. And before I play those clips, I do want to mention that a majority, there was a new poll, a new Rasmussen poll that was conducted. A majority of respondents in this poll believe that DNC, or Democratic presidential nominee, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton, well, she committed the crime by using private email server to conduct State Department businesses. See, they reported Tuesday, yesterday. Their report finds that 64% of likely U.S. voters say Clinton, or I'm sorry, 64% of likely, well, likely U.S. voters is how they frame it, say that Clinton likely broke the law when she sent and received classified emails through her personal server while serving as Secretary of State. About 30% said it was unlikely that she violated the law. 19% of Democratic voters in the poll said it was very likely that, she had committed a crime. That's one in five. All right, think about that. You know, the former FBI director, James Comey, criticized Clinton's server use back in 2016, July 5th, and then subsequent to that, but he declined to recommend criminal charges. That was on July 5th, 2016, where he said, no, I'm not going to recommend criminal charges. Well, what a bunch of hokiness. Hokiness with respect to that. Now, I'm going to play a clip from, or specifically relating to James Comey right now, and have a listen to Comey's statements. I think this is extremely important and sets the stage for what I'm about to, or for the further, the remainder of the show here.
Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true. There were a small number of portion markings on, I think, three of the documents.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
No, there was classified material emailed.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
So in 2016, that was James, or that was Trey Gowdy interviewing or interrogating, questioning James Comey. Trey Gowdy questioning James Comey, where Comey admits criminality. Whether the intent was there is something, is a matter of dispute by Comey. But intent makes no difference, really. It's in this particular case, as it applies to this. That was James Comey responding to Trey Gowdy's line of questions, where he outright admitted criminal activity. So there's no question about what took place. None. And again, the sense here, or the application of what's taking place, is what we need to concern ourselves with is equal treatment under the law. Number one, the rule of law, and number two, the equal treatment under the law. Now, as I mentioned before, I've got a clip from Sean Hannity from last night. James Kellstrom and Jay Sekulow appeared on Sean Hannity last night and talking about this very issue. And their takes are extremely important in my view, because they echo what I had said on the first. But this coming from a different perspective, and remember, James Kellstrom was high up in the FBI, and he knows the players here, the people involved, and Jay Sekulow is also President Donald Trump's attorney, his legal counsel. So both are speaking from positions of authority. Both are involved heavily in the analysis of what's taking place. And I found it very interesting what James, what Mr. Kellstrom had said with respect to the process. I guess looking, and you have to look at James Kellstrom from, you know, him being an insider, understanding how the FBI works and understanding how all of the mechanisms work together from the directorship on down to the field agent. So listen to what he says, and listen, and by the way, this is why I dislike, and this is why we attempt not to use people on cell phones on our programs. And I'm telling you right now, if I could make it a law, and it's unfortunate that many people have given up landline phones and don't have the capabilities or the knowledge with respect to connecting via Skype or some other mechanical means. They use cell phones. So what you're going to hear is it sounds like it's edited. It's not, all right? But it sounds that way. I did check the original with the transcript, the Rush transcript, as well as the original on that I personally recorded from a television. Okay, now this is a person. This is a recording from the computer, but I personally recorded from the television, and the sounds are all there. So don't worry about that. It's not. You can check the transcript once the Rush transcript has been verified, or you can check the Rush transcript. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is that this was not edited, but it sounds like it does because of these stupid cell phones. And the second thing is, listen to Jay Sekulow's approach to the email, how he would handle James Comey, the investigation, because he's not calling for a special counsel or an independent counsel to investigate Comey. He's calling for something a little bit different here. Have a listen to this. It's a little bit longer than the last, but it's important.
If you haven't concluded the investigation, how is it possible, and you haven't even interviewed the person involved, how do you start drafting what Comey was drafting, which is her exoneration?
It was clear to me, but I think it's clear to everyone now that basically he's been carrying water, you know, for the Clinton folks, Obama, everybody. The whole thing was a farce. I mean, as soon as you know there's no grand jury, as soon as you know you can't compel testimony, you can't compel, you can't get records, you can't take computers for searching, you can't do any of that stuff. It's a farce. The whole thing was a farce from the beginning. FBI agents don't like to be part of farces.
Yeah, Jay Sekulow. Let me ask from your standpoint.
Yep.
Because I think this is so important, especially in light of the special counsel, which was James Comey's goal after he leaked information to the New York
right.
Times, which in itself may have been illegal in terms of the Records Act and other issues he's involved in. But 33,000 deleted subpoenaed emails. Acid watch, a wash, bleach pit, destruction of information on Blackberries and iPhones. Why do I think that I'd be calling you if I did any one of these things? Because I'd be in jail for obstructing justice and violating the law.
Yeah, well, because James Comey had a predetermined outcome of where this was going. He said that in the information that Senators Grassley and Senator Graham said very clearly, that the information, they were already writing up their exoneration, their declination letter, as it's called, regarding criminality. This was before 16 witnesses are interviewed and before the target of the matter, as James Comey was told to call it, was even interviewed. So what James said was right. This was a faux investigation from the start. And the problem is, it's really been a fraud on the American people here. This whole scenario of James Comey's actions and his statements before Congress were not only incorrect as a matter of fact, but I think puts him in serious legal jeopardy.
Does this now, Jay, open up the possibility that the Attorney General should now get to the truth, considering I think this reveals more than anything else that the fix was in for Hillary and James Comey was involved in it?
Look, I think James Comey needs to be the subject of what's an investigation as to what's going on here. I mean, look at the evidence. I mean, this information is damaging, to say the least. It puts the whole investigation, or whatever you want to call what was going on there, really a sideshow is what it ended up being. It puts the whole matter, as they like to call it, into perspective. It was never intended to be an investigation in the first place, and
exactly.
James Comey was part of that.
Yeah.
That's what James Comey
James
was part
Kallstrom,
of.
James Kallstrom, James, I have so much respect for law enforcement.
It's even worse than that. You know, Comey, you know, this whole business of this so-called phony Russian investigation, you know, that's all to sidetrack the president so he can't have his appointments, he can't deal with anything else. It's all Comey, you know, playing act two of a farce, basically.
Last quick question. You know, I've interviewed Julian Assange. He said that it was not Russia. I've interviewed him five times. Now Dana Rohrabacher believes him. Does Robert Mueller, James Kallstrom, in your opinion, have an obligation to talk to the one guy on this earth that would know for sure if that the DNC emails didn't come from Russia?
Mueller should never be the special counsel. He's got a conflict of interest a mile wide. He and Comey are buddies. I mean, it's just preposterous that the deputy attorney general, number one, appointed a special counsel. Number two, appointed Mueller of all people. I mean, it's just outrageous. Should he investigate? Yes.
I think so too.
Sean, I think an investigation. By the way, I think the Department of Justice can do as it relates to James Comey. I think the Department of, you don't have to have a special counsel for James Comey. I think the Department of Justice needs to find out about and do the right appropriate investigation with the grand jury as to the leaking of a conversation that James Comey had with the President of the United States. I would start with that and then work backwards to the fact that he predetermined the outcome of the other investigation or so called investigation. But let's start with where this leak started, a leak from the President of the United States, a statement that James Comey had with the President of the United States. He leaked to a friend of his to leak to the press. That's inexcusable and should be investigated.
All right. Thank you all. Important things. We'll stay on it. Nobody else in the media apparently will touch it.
Except, of course, for me, Sean. You know me, right? Sean Hannity, I believe is one of the good guys, one of the best guys out there in the media. Trust me when I tell you, there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. But let's go back to the Hillary Clinton criminality. Let's go back to the criminal cabal of criminality. It's bigger than what you think. I'm going to expand upon this and take you back in time. Now, this is important because, Hillary Clinton is not the only one. No, and the Clinton regime under Obama is not the only one. Look, this goes back a decade and a half, all right? Let's go back to June 9th of 2000. This is so important for context and for understanding the shadow government, that exists within the Beltway, all right? June 9th of 2000. There's home video footage from a private fundraiser where Hillary Clinton appeared talking about how she has deliberately avoided using email so she wouldn't leave a paper trail. Conversely, when I conduct investigations, everything goes on paper. And yes, I do memoranda to the file. It's necessary. It's a must. But so when I look at a statement like that, when I see a statement like that, no. You don't want to leave a paper trail? There's a problem. And she writes, as much as I've been investigated and all of that, you know, why would I? Why would I ever want to do email? Can you imagine? Now, that's Hillary Clinton on June 9th of 2000. But necessity is going to compel her to change her mind. And it is known that by 2006, she's going to start using a BlackBerry for email. And these BlackBerries... this overlaps into the Awan criminal cabal instilled in the Congressional House, which I'm going to do a dedicated program. I don't know if it's going to be an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, but we've got to expose what really has been taking place with the Awans, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Huma Abedin, Wiener, and Clinton, because inside this, you've got a number of offshoots, a number of investigative trails that include but are not limited to the gun and drug running. You've got child and human trafficking, including sex trafficking. You've got the classification of email or the sending of and storing of classified emails. You've got the Awans, Pakistani nationals, I believe, professionally by my research, sharing information with hostile governments, including Pakistani ISI. You've got the Awans and all of their associates, I believe, blackmailing members of Congress. You've got a whole cache of hardware, including BlackBerry's laptops and other equipment, routers and such, that Imran Awan at his house in Lorton, Virginia. Andre Taggart, again, interviewed by George Webb, I believe, was one of those. In fact, him and Goodman together. And regardless of what you think of the interviewers, look at the information, the fruit of the investigation. And as long as that is intact, it doesn't matter who interviews them. So the statements that they make or that can be verified is what is important. So this leads off into many different aspects. But if you go back to 2005 even, because we have to set this up contextually so it's accurate, the State Department issued a decree that sensitive but unclassified information should never be transmitted through personal email accounts. Now, this is by edict on November 4, 2005. Remember that date, November 4, 2005. The State Department says, hey, sensitive but unclassified information should not be transmitted through personal email accounts. They also go on to state that it's the department's general policy that normal day-to-day operations be conducted on an authorized, meaning government, server, which has the proper level of security control to provide non-repudiation, authentication, and encryption to ensure confidentiality, integrity, and availability of the resident information. This, according to a State Department memo dated January 12th of 2016, or I'm sorry, this from a disclosure on January 2016 through recalled to the records recalled from November 4th, 2005. I hope I said that correctly. But this also appeared as well in the Washington Post in March of 2015. Now, that date's not that important. That's the Washington Post reporting it. Now, the department's regulations, the Department of State, also required that anyone who leaves the Department of State must make sure that all record material that they possess is incorporated in the department's official files. In other words, if you've done anything outside of that normal structure where they cannot archive on their system, that you've got to turn everything over. That's a requirement. And if you violate that requirement, you're in violation of policy and law. In fact, they even state that, let me make sure of this verbiage here. The department's regulations also require that departing officials must ensure that all record material that they possess is incorporated in the department, in the department's official files, and that all file searches for which they have been tasked have been completed, such as those required to respond to FOIA requests, congressional or litigation-related document requests. Now, this is the key sentence here. Fines, imprisonment, or both may be imposed for the willful and unlawful removal or destruction of records as stated in USC, the U.S. Criminal Code, 18 U.S.C. Section 2071. Right now, Hillary Diana Rodham Clinton has been or is arguably in violation and has been in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 2071. Little help to our friends in the Department of Justice. Now, if you go back to March of 2007, 2008, hey, even the Bush administration gets caught up in this. A Congressional Oversight Committee investigation, they investigated allegations that the White House fired U.S. attorney for political reasons. Now, the committee asked Bush officials to turn over relevant emails only to find out what? That work had been conducted on private email servers, this under the Bush administration, back in March of 2007-2008. Millions of emails, millions are deleted and permanently lost, preventing the committee from continuing their investigation. Bush officials use email accounts associated with a private server. Now listen to this, gwb43.com. George Bush, their people used it, gwb43.com. And that was owned and controlled by who do you think? The RNC, which is a private political entity not covered by government oversight. The Washington Post published this on March 27th, 2007. Oh, how people will never learn. Now think about that. Same deal, same situation. Instead of HRC or Hillary Clinton online or email, it's George W. Bush, gwb43.com. In 2015, right after Clinton's use of a private email address was revealed, there was a comment made on the website Vox or by Vox. The sentence is this. I pulled this up, and I quote, that the Bush administration's email is what's being referenced here. That scandal unfolded well into the final year of the Bush's presidency, then overlapped with another email secrecy scandal over official emails that got improperly logged and then deleted, which itself dragged into Obama's first year in office. There's simply no way that when Clinton decided to use her personal email address as Secretary of State, she was unaware of the national scandal that Bush officials had created by doing the same. Do you see this criminal course of conduct by all of the globalists? Now, it's also noted at Vox, and I quote, "Perhaps even more stunning is that the Obama White House, whose top officials were presumably exchanging frequent emails with Clinton, apparently did not insist she adopt an official email account." You talk about lawlessness? There it is. So even before the Hillary Clinton scandal, you had the George W. Bush scandal, GWB43.com. This is back in March of 2007-2008. And it overlaps into the first year of the Obama regime. Hillary Clinton was well aware of this, but thumbed her nose at it. So are you hearing any of this on the press? I doubt it. And then listen to this. While campaigning for president the first time around, this is on June 20th, 2007, Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton has the nerve to say this. And I quote, "Our Constitution is being shredded. We know about secret wiretaps. We know about secret military tribunals, the secret White House email accounts." Did you notice what she said there? The secret White House email accounts. "It's a stunning record of secrecy and corruption, of cronyism run amok." Now, she was quoted by ABC News on March 6, 2015. And the day before by The Hill, March 5th, 2015. That was drawn up, accessed on March 6th and March 5th, 2015. But this is a reference to a scandal that became earlier in the month where it was found that the White House advisor Karl Rove and other officials had used private email accounts and that they deleted all of their emails before investigators could get to them. This goes back to 2007-2008. And the point is this. Hillary Clinton saw this and said, "So what? I'm above the law." And I believe truly that this was to, she fully expected to be in office. And it was in 2008 when the National Archives and Records Administration, what they did was they issued a bulletin number 2008-05, the National Archives and Records Administration, NRA issues bulletin 2008-05, that mandates that every government email system is supposed to permit easy and timely retrieval, and all work mails are supposed to be permanently preserved. And in addition, in the case of a cabinet secretary in that position, permanent records are to be sent to the department's record service center at the end of the secretary's tenure or sooner for safekeeping. Now, think about this. When Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, during her tenure, the State Department had no permanent inspector general the entire time Clinton is Secretary of State. Instead, an acting inspector with very close ties to the State Department leadership fills the role. Now, inspector general, what they do, they're an internal watchdog tasked with discovering any type of corruption that's going on within this specific department. So each department has an inspector general that oversees, kind of like their own cop. All right, you're doing this wrong, fix it. Well, the position went vacant in January of 08 when Obama came into office. But Obama, he does not even nominate anyone to fill the position for more than 4 years. And this is unprecedented. It's the longest time any department in government ever went without a permanent one. 5 months after Clinton leaves office, Obama nominated Steve Linnick, who is confirmed as the new permanent inspector general for 3 months later on September 30th, 2013. Now, it's interesting because the Wall Street Journal back in 2015 wrote that the lack of a confirmed inspector general raises questions about the oversight of the department under Mr. Obama and Ms. Clinton. The department has been criticized for its failure to gather and archive email records. The acting inspector general during Clinton's term is banned from taking the job permanently due to conflict of interest rules. Now, there's a guy by the name of Matthew Harris cited. He's a professor who researches inspectors general. Kind of an interesting niche, right? He's going to later comment that it's a convenient way to prevent oversight. And that's what this was all about, preventing oversight. See, the acting inspectors general, they don't feel empowered. They don't have the backing of their people. They're in a position where they could be removed at any moment. So they tread lightly. But this was by design. This was a setup. Do you see how important the backstory is? You've got the Bush email scandal, the discovery, and the wanton lawlessness there. Clinton looks at it and says, well, hey, I'm going to do it too. And there's no one that ever gets punished. Now, it was on February 1st, 2008, where Clinton's private email domain is set up under a false name. An IP address associated with ClintonEmail.com domain, later used by Hillary Clinton, is registered to an Eric Hodum. And I'd gone through this. And 2 years ago, I went through this. It was on February 1st that her private email was set up. The IP address for ClintonEmail.com, along with some others registered in Hotum's name, is connected to Bill and Hillary Clinton's home address in Chappaqua. And ABC News later called Hodum a mystery man, since no one with that name is known to exist. Now, there is a guy by the name of Eric Hotham who worked for Bill Clinton when he was president and was an aide for Hillary Clinton in the early 2000s. And worked for Citicorp and then J.P. Morgan since. And interestingly enough, that guy, when confronted, has refused to even comment. And it was around June of 08 when Clinton's first private email server set up in her house. Now, why is all this important? Why am I going through this history? Because you need to know the backdrop and the context in order to understand where we're at today and what happened in the past, the players, and who's involved, and what we need to do about it. Jay Sekulow said what we need to do about it, but this kind of gives some additional context to it. But according to the FBI, around 2007, Justin Cooper purchased an Apple OS X server. Now, Cooper happened to be a personal aide to former President Bill Clinton at the time. On February 1st, 2008, as I mentioned, the domain name's ClintonEmail.com. There was another one. It was WJC, as for William J. Clinton, office.com, WJCOffice.com, and PresidentClinton.com were registered, but apparently the server that uses them, judging by everything, that server does not become operational for a few months. The server is physically, at this time, located in their Chappaqua, New York house, where the Clintons live. And it consists of an Apple Power Macintosh G4 G5 tower with an HP printer. And according to Cooper, sometime around June of 08, an Apple employee installed the server in the basement of the Chappaqua house. This is stuff you need to know. Cooper is the only person with administrative privileges to the server. However, the Clinton family and their house staff have access to it. Hillary Clinton uses her ATT BlackBerry. Well, it's actually att.blackberry.net, uses that email account as her primary email address until sometime around mid to late January 09, when she then switches to a newly created email of hdr22@clintonemail.com account hosted on this server. Now, we're going to do a program. I'll do a program how this intersects with Awan, the BlackBerries of Awan fame. All right. And of course, back the first time around, it was June 7th of 08 when Hillary conceded the DNC nomination to Obama. But moving along here, that's just kind of a time marker in history. Well, it's interesting because around June 7th, around that same time, Clinton's computer technician begins managing Clinton's private email server. It was after Clinton ended her presidential campaign on June 7th. Enter Brian Pagliano. He's tasked with, is the lead specialist to take care of the new private email server in the Clinton Chappaqua home. He's going to keep the job until mid-2013. Pagliano worked as an IT director for Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2008. He was paid by Clinton's Senate leadership PAC through April of 2009. And then guess what? Right after Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, guess where Pagliano went? He was awarded with a job at the Department of State as an IT guy at the Department of State. Just a month later. Now, remember the emails included Cindy Blumenthal. This is important because these players, these people are still involved. Clinton wanted to hire Sid Blumenthal as an official national security advisor in the State Department. Blumenthal, he had worked with Bill Clinton in the 90s in the White House, had been a journalist, then joined the President Clinton's campaign as a senior advisor in 07. There's something here going on with Sidney Blumenthal. And you can even see from the WikiLeaks with the emails to Blumenthal. But there was a 2015... Well, anyway, Obama banned Blumenthal from any government job, period. Interesting how that works. And if you go back to a 2015 Politico article, Obama aides were convinced that Blumenthal spread false personal and policy rumors about Obama during the battle between Clinton and Obama for the Democratic nomination. So Obama had this thing. Hey, you want to talk bad about me, pal? You ain't getting in. No, I'm not letting you in. Now, Blumenthal thereafter got a full-time job at the Clinton Foundation with a $120,000 a year salary. For the duration of Clinton's time as Secretary of State, he will often email her, and the WikiLeaks show this. Very specific intelligence information. And where did he get this intelligence information? Again, you're not going to hear about this. So you had Sidney Blumenthal sending intelligence, classified information, to Hillary Clinton and vice versa. And this was the subject of the Comey denials. But go a step deeper. Where did he get this information from? He got it by his own admission by Tyler Drumheller, a CIA agent until 2005. And as we look at Blumenthal's time at the Clinton Foundation, he advises the Secretary of State frequently, promotes interests of two specific government contractors, being paid $120,000 a year as a full-time employee with the Clinton Foundation. He gets a job in early 2009 at the behest of former President Bill Clinton, who employed him in the White House in the 1990s, and he keeps that position until 2015. The very same month that the Clinton email scandal first became news. Longtime friend, of course, of the Clintons. His specific job focused on highlighting the legacy of Bill Clinton's presidency. And many people within the Clinton Foundation questioned, you know, looked at this and said, what's this guy doing here? It's kind of like, you know, the boss's nephew working there and doing nothing. Anyway, Blumenthal had a business relationship with two companies, Osprey Global Solutions and Constellation Group. Both were trying to get government contracts to assist U.S.-supported rebels in Libya in 2011. Think about that. What happened in Libya? By the way, it was after March of 2015. What happened? Blumenthal became a paid consultant to American Bridge and Media Matters, two groups supporting Clinton's presidential campaign, run by David Brock. Well, Brock's an ally of both Clinton and Blumenthal, or both of Clinton and Blumenthal. And his concurrent work with the foundation and the Brock groups, and a pair of businesses seeking potentially lucrative contracts in Libya. You talk about blurred lines between Hillary Clinton's State Department work and that of her charitable organization? Come on. It's self-enrichment. It's cronyism at its finest. That's how Sidney Blumenthal fits into all this. Now, just before Hillary Clinton's Senate confirmation for Department of State, Justin Cooper, registers 3 email domains for Hillary Clinton from at her Chappaqua, New York house. One domain, clintonemail.com. That's going to be used for all of Clinton's emails for her for the next, roughly next 5 years. That's the one of primary focus. And Cooper was a longtime personal assistant to Bill Clinton. But you know what? He had no security clearance, no expertise in safeguarding computers. According, it'd be like hiring me. I don't know anything about that kind of stuff. And then we have Obama taking office, of course. He had been elected November 6th of 08. He became, he got into the Oval Office by selection on January 20th of 09. And it was shortly before January 21st, shortly before he took office, records officials stated that they were not comfortable advising Clinton that she needs to permanently archive her work-related emails. What the? What? There was an email exchange that appears right before Clinton became Secretary of State that records officials within the Bureau of Administration wonder if there's an electronic method that could be used to capture her emails because they are, and I quote, not comfortable, end quote, advising the new administration to print and file email records. Okay. And then, of course, on January 21st of 09, Clinton is sworn in as Secretary of State. And there was no changes made the way that she handled her emails. It'd be like me, okay, not having using what I use here, working for the government and not adapting to the government standards. It's crazy. You and I, again, would be in jail. This is what Jay Sekulow spoke about, what you heard. This is what Kallstrom spoke about. And this is what Comey lied about. You know, at the time that she took office as Secretary of State, the State Department, they didn't say anything about her use of home computers, as long as they were secure. But they didn't enforce that. But you know what they did? What the State Department did, it was on the very day that she was nominated and approved in that position as Secretary of State, they set up a classified email account for Clinton. But you know what? She never used it. This is according to it, a September 2015 letter from Julia Freefield, the department's Assistant Secretary of State for Legislative Affairs. And I quote, Secretary Clinton did not use a classified email server at the State Department. An account was set up on ClassNet on her calendar, but it was not used. ClassNet, by the way, involves State Department workstations designed to allow employees to view classified information. That's kind of StateNet. Just remember that. Or ClassNet, I'm sorry. Remember that. That'll come up in the future if this ever goes to trial. And I do hope it does. Now, in 2015, Clinton's website will address how she read classified information. See, the secretary's office was located in a secure area, SCIF, I suppose. Classified information was viewed in hard copy by Clinton while in office. But while on travel, the State Department had rigorous protocols for her and traveling staff to receive and transmit information of all types, but it was never followed. During her tenure, hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of classified emails are sent or received by Clinton when she's outside the U.S. including some to or from Obama. And he knew about this. This is by the FBI themselves. The report indicates that Clinton and her immediate staff were repeatedly notified of foreign travel risks and were warned that they're watching. These countries are watching. There were at least five breaches by hostile countries. The number of Clinton emails that were sent or received outside of the U.S., you'll never know. They were redacted in the FBI reports, plural. Although they mention hundreds were classified at the confidential level. Additional details are redacted. So nearly all mentions of top secret emails are redacted. So it's impossible to know. It's rigged. And I'm going further than Sean Hannity. God bless him. I'm going further than he's gone. And by the way, during her tenure, Clinton uses 11, count them, 11 different BlackBerries and four separate iPads while she is Secretary of State. I haven't used one, let alone 11, and an iPad. What? Huh? It becomes public knowledge. It became public knowledge back in 2015 that Clinton extensively used a private email account for all of her email usage. She will claim that she did it for convenience so she wouldn't have to carry two personal devices at once. 11. Count them. The FBI will later determine that Clinton actually used in succession 11 email-capable BlackBerries while Secretary of State. She uses two more BlackBerries with the same phone number after her tenure is over. But you know what? The FBI, they're not able to obtain any of the BlackBerries to examine them. Now think, where have we heard about finding a cache of BlackBerries lately? At the former home of Imran Awan. That's right. A whole big box there of BlackBerries. Smashed up. And some laptops. And some router, I believe. Some other electronic equipment. The FBI will later identify five iPads associated with Clinton. I said four, but five. The fifth one, not so sure. The FBI later obtained three of the iPads, but they only examined two because one was a gift that Clinton gave away as soon as she purchased it. Okay, let's put that aside. They examined two, but they were wiped clean. Monica Hanley, she was in charge with buying replacement BlackBerries for Clinton at AT&T stores. These AT&T stores, remember Hanley, but also remember Awan, because Awan's had access to and ran the BlackBerry operation in Congress. And you've heard of the trusted, and I'm not sure, so sure how many people have heard of Wiener's trusted staff. Huma Abedin and Wiener's trusted staff with BlackBerries. There's a reference in all of this testimony, really, to Imran Awan. Folks, the spy ring, not just in Congress, but high up in the government. This is so critical. Again, the investigative findings that I've been uncovering and seeing posted on the open source end of things, this is absolutely critical. People need to understand. And by the way, there are people out there that are saying information, providing information on the alternative media, by alternative media, that are not exactly 100% correct. And I'm not going to correct them. It's not my job to do that. I'm just going to carry my own water here. But I'm going to just tell you, be careful who you listen to, only because some of the information is not 100% accurate. And I'm just going to stop there. But please understand, this is a very complex investigation. It has many levels to it, and you cannot believe everything you hear. And certainly you've got to, if you do come across a piece of information, you've got to drill down and get off away from the computer and actually go physically conduct an interview or by phone. I mean, you don't rely on the internet at all in my experience, but except for perhaps some level of direction. But understand that for the first 3 months of Hillary Clinton's tenure, her server, her private email server, over which all of the communications were made, had absolutely no standard encryption generally used on the internet. This thing was wide open. In fact, okay, very quickly, because I know I'm getting close to the end of the program. During this time, Clinton and her aides exchanged emails discussing North Korea, Mexico, Afghanistan, and just a whole laundry list of other CIA operations, and even a briefing for Obama. Some of the emails will be later redacted, including one written to Clinton about Afghanistan. But anyway, it was 3 months after her nomination or her approval as Secretary of State. Jake Sullivan, the top aide, emails Hillary Clinton a draft of a very confidential report that she is to make to Obama. Now, this is referenced by the Washington Post on March 27, 2016. Attached is a draft of your Mexico trip report to Obama. Now, that's according to the email. But she travels to Belgium, Switzerland, Egypt, Israel, Palestine, or the Palestinian areas, Turkey, Mexico, Japan, Indonesia, South Korea, China. Her emails would have absolutely no defense against eavesdropping by foreign intelligence and hackers. In addition, some intelligence agencies are known to attempt eavesdropping around this time. This is unbelievable. It was back in September of last year that the FBI reported that ClintonEmail.com email traffic was vulnerable to compromise. Well, no kidding. Especially during January through March of 2009. Yeah, no kidding. Folks, we've just begun to scratch the surface. The criminality that we are seeing. Why did I spend today's program on this? Because we need to push back. This is the nuggets of the deep state. The shadow government, more precisely. This is the Achilles heel to the shadow government. When you mention the email investigation and Comey's role with Mueller, who should not, as you heard Kallstrom talk about, should not even be in that position. When you hear this, understand that we're dealing with a conspiracy. Yes, by definition, a conspiracy. But what's at stake here? At the end of the day, what is at stake is the viability of Donald Trump as president of the United States. If you think that this is a fight about anything else, think again. The shadow government operational, and this is not about continuity of government, believe me, the shadow government, which is operational behind the scenes, that is attempting to tank the Donald Trump presidential administration and maintain the legacy of Obama, who remains in D.C. They are using this as a weapon. More on this tomorrow. Let me know if you like it. Send an email to studio@HagmanReport.com or Hagman@Hagman.com. studio@Hagman@Hagman.com. Let me know if you like it. Until later, God bless.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.